Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the premier radio networks, including 160 of the best stations in the U.S. and Canada, and XM Channel 166 on Sunday, June 19th, 2011, Father's Day. This is episode 780. Enjoy. Good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, and it's time to talk computers and the internet and cell phones and camcorders. Happy Father's Day, by the way. This is a good Father's Day show. This is all about the kind of stuff lots of dads like. Well, lots of moms, lots of kids. Actually, everybody likes iPads and cell phones, computers, the internet, that kind of stuff. If you want to talk about it with me, I'd love to hear from you. We have a lines are open. Operator is standing by. We only have one. We only have five. But that's enough, believe me, because I only take about five calls an hour. You don't want to be on hold for longer than an hour, do you? 8888-ASK Leo. Once the phone rings, keep it ringing. We'll get to you. 8888-ASK Leo. 888-827-5536. If you get a busy signal, just hang up, try again. Best time to call usually is after I hang up on somebody. That means a line is open. It's kind of a lottery, frankly, to get in. But I do appreciate your trying because I love to talk to you. 888-827-5536. You know, you don't have to remember that. You just have to remember the website, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. It's funny, Dr. Mom in our chat room, she's a physician. She comes by the doctor, honestly. She says, in my family, I'm the geek, followed by Dr. Son. Dr. Dad is the noob. As in newbie, as in neophyte. Interesting article by Peter Kafka, all things digital website, which is really one of the best, most authoritative sources of tech news these days. For some reason, I've noticed this for a while, despite all the web video you and I and everybody else are watching, television viewing has not gone down. Actually, we've got two young people in the studio, Eli and Noah, today. Do you watch more TV or more YouTube these days? Dad's in television, so you should watch TV, shouldn't you? Yes, they're nodding. Keep Dad busy. Well, it's starting to shift. Nielsen, the company that does all that, not only all the TV ratings, but also all the net numbers as well, has done some research that says the more web video you watch, the less time you spend watching traditional TV. Well, duh, they had to do research for that. The more YouTube you're viewing, the less TV you're viewing. And if you look at 18 to 34-year-olds, it's really a big shift. And that's YouTube, but it's also Netflix. We just saw a couple of weeks ago that Netflix is now 30% of all internet traffic during prime time. Y'all are sitting there watching your streaming Netflix, aren't you? But it's going slowly. And video consumption on all screens, including mobile, is in aggregate going up. We watch a whole lot of TV. Get ready for this. You'll like this, Phil. 159 hours a month. Almost 40 hours a week on average of television. That's eight hours a day, 5 days a week, or 5 hours, 6 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's a lot of TV. Looks like despite the fact that we are watching more web video, there's no doubt about it, we are also watching more TV. In fact, we're watching more TV this year than we watched last year, which is just amazing. Now, time-shifted television, of course, has gone up a lot. For the first quarter in 2011, based on this survey, the amount of time spent watching TV for people over 2 years of age. They don't include one-year-olds. 158 hours and 47 minutes watching TV in the home. 10 hours and 46 minutes. This is a month watching time-shifted TV. You know, your TiVo, your DVR. I'm sorry. That's 10 hours, 46 minutes if you have both a television and a TiVo. If you don't have TV, that number goes up. This is a very confusing research. Using the internet on a computer, 25 hours a month. That's less than an hour a day. Who are they talking to? Not my family. Watching video on the internet, a mere 4 hours and 33 minutes. But that's up from almost an hour from last year this time. 34% increase year to year. Mobile subscribers watching video on a mobile phone. This is the one that really surprised me. 4 hours and 20 minutes a month. Almost an hour a week. More than an hour a week. Watching video on a mobile phone. Do you watch video on a mobile phone? I can't. You know, it just. I think it was Steve Jobs who said, nobody's going to watch video on a screen that small. Of course, they immediately put video into the iPhone after he said that. I just. It baffles me. That people would watch. That's a lot of video watched on a mobile phone. I got to think that that's mostly YouTube. I know the only way I watch video on a mobile phone is when we're sitting at dinner or talking or I'm with friends and they say, oh, did you see that YouTube, that crazy YouTube video? And then I will, because I could do that on my phone. I can, as you can too, if you have a smartphone, you just launch YouTube and you watch the video. Not the ideal way to watch it, but it's what you got, right? So does dad have a, this would be a good father. It's not too late, you know. It's Father's Day all day. If dad doesn't yet have an iPad or an iPhone or an Android phone or some way to watch, you know, those groin shot videos on YouTube, you can still do that. The lip syncing videos, you could still do that. it seems like not the ideal way to watch video, but I guess it's the thing you have. That's what matters. Do you think has anybody been to the cell phone store this morning? A lot of people in the cell phone store. Yeah, kind of busy. Google is up to something. There's some rumors going around. You know, we've heard for over a year that Google was going to do a Facebook clone, and they've got the bits and pieces. You know, they've got Latitude, which tells you where you are. They've got Places, which allows you to review restaurants and, you know, businesses. They've got Google Profiles, which kind of is like who you are online. They've got Buzz. Nobody uses it, but they've got Buzz, which is their kind of Twitter or Facebook status update thing. Google apparently has acquired a site called Photovine.com, and they've trademarked the name Photovine. Now, Google already has photo sharing. They've got Picasa. They bought that some years ago. It's a great, great little photo sharing site. According to the trademark filing, this is kind of interesting. Google's trademark filing for Photovine says it will be used for communication services, namely transmission of visual images and data by telecommunications network, wireless communications networks, the internet, information services networks, and data networks. Also for non-downloadable computer software and online social networking services. Sounds like, you know, and we've heard rumors this week, too, that Facebook is working on a kind of mobile photo sharing application as well. Sounds like Google and Facebook and Apple are all going head-to-head in this space. If Facebook builds this in, I think this is going to be that's going to be the killer app, right? Because Facebook already is the largest photo sharing site in the world. Have you ever used Instagram? That's the popular one on Apple, on the iPhone. But that's just a little small company. So I think it's only two people. They've received a lot of venture capital, but it's two guys doing Instagram. That's, talk about a success. They have 5 million users. And the whole idea of Instagram is you take a picture on your smartphone and you share it with your Instagram, people following you on Instagram. And now it looks like Google and Facebook are all going to get in this space too. I'll tell you, we spend a lot of time looking at screens, don't we? A lot of time. More and more all the time. TechGuyLabs.com, that's the website. If you want to call, the phone number is there. The chat room is there too. We've got some great people in the chat room. I kind of think of them as my brain on the internet. TechGuyLabs.com. Your call's coming up. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
It was the 3rd of September. That day I'll always remember.
It's Temptations, right?
And the band played on.
It's kind of a little downbeat Father's Day song. How about that? We should get to, I got an assignment for you, Kyle. Kyle Benham picking the tunes. I think we're going to have Father's Day songs all day today. I have a feeling. You got to get that Luther Vandross song, though. Was it In My Father's Eye? That makes me cry every time I hear it.
I'll get it.
Yeah, I know you'll get it, Kyle. Papa was a rolling stone. Wherever he left his hat was his home.
That was for Clarence Clemens.
That's for Clarence. Okay. He didn't play on that, did he? The big man? No. You never know. He's played on so many things. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Father's Day 2011. Let's get to the phones. And Richie's on the line from Los Angeles. Hi, Richie. Leo Laporte. Did I press the right button? No, I didn't. Let me press it again.
What line?
No, I'll press it. I'll press it, Kyle. Let me press it. Can I do it? Can I do it, Kyle? I want to see if my my thing is working. I have a virtual. No. It's not. Go ahead. You'll have to take it. Line one. I'll figure out why. I see it, but I can't push the button. Hi, Richie.
Hi, Leo. Great honor to talk to you today.
Well, thank you, sir. What can I do for you?
I got a question about MobileMe. I've been a subscriber since that service came out, and I designed my website on iWeb. I
was thrilled.
I know, boy. Now that they've decided to go to the cloud and discontinue MobileMe, I'm worried about what happens to my website, which is hosted by MobileMe, and whether or not I can port it over to some other service if, in fact, Apple has no plans to continue hosting websites for their members.
It's my sense of this, and I don't, you know, they're not accepting new MobileMe subscribers, and they will transition those of us who have MobileMe accounts over to the new iCloud automatically. They're saying that through June 30th, 2012, so 1 year from now, MobileMe will continue exactly as always. The real question is what happens June 30th, 2012?
Right.
And Apple hasn't been clear about this. I mean, the implication is your site will be gone. Furthermore, I think it's pretty clear that Apple is no longer developing iWeb, won't put out any more releases of iWeb. It's also gone. And this is no consolation to you, and I apologize for saying this, Richie, but I told you so. The problem with using a proprietary web development tool, as sexy as iWeb was, just like Microsoft had FrontPage for many years, is that it creates proprietary websites in the sense of these websites are not really anything you can edit with anything else. They look great. I love iWeb. And for a one-off quickie site, there was nothing better than iWeb. But, you're going to have to continue to use iWeb to maintain the site. I don't think it's very maintainable with other tools. Now, iWeb does have FTP. So you can get most, not all, but most of the functionality by using iWeb now to upload your site using file transfer protocol, FTP, to another host. And you'll have a year to do that. But what you'll
I checked with one of the hosts, and for instance, is it Foursquare? I forgot the name of it.
Squarespace. Yeah, Squarespace you cannot because they have their own software. But
right, that's exactly what they told me. And
right.
I said, can you recommend a service that will be able to port it over? And they said, we can't think of any.
Oh, yeah, there's lots. You can go to Dreamhost. Anybody who's just plain normal web hosting, not
right.
software plus web hosting, that's what Squarespace is, but plain normal web hosting, you can use FTP and upload your site. Now, not all features will work because, unfortunately, iWeb, just like FrontPage before it, would had some plugins and stuff that were specific to MobileMe. So some of your stuff will work. I think it's a couple of things. First of all, you have a year. It is, I think, very possible. In fact, I'm going to lobby Squarespace. They're an advertiser. I'm going to lobby them. They have translators for many other web sites. This would be a brilliant thing for them to do. How many millions of iWeb sites are out there? How many people like you saying, what do I do now? They could write a translator. And if they did that sometime between now and June next year, you'd be good. Somebody will do that, I have a feeling. Because there's a lot of people like you who are sitting there with iWeb websites. So
yeah, and this site was created specially because I was able to do it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very simple and
yeah, and beautiful.
Even though it's iWeb designed, but I'm afraid that I'm going to have to start from scratch or do a major cut and paste if I want to translate it someplace else. I'm the guy, by the way, who wrote you about multi-angle, multi-camera streaming a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, we want to do that, Richie. It's yeah, it's a great idea. So I think that you have a year, and I think that there's no reason to panic yet. But I think you should consider that in 12 months you're going to be offline, so you're going to have to do something. It will range from getting a site at Squarespace or somewhere and using their software to kind of duplicate the look and feel. That's going to be a considerable amount of work, but doable. They'll duplicate the look and feel of your current site. Easier would be to go to Squarespace and just make a site that has the same functionality. It's not going to look as good, but it'll have the same functionality. But you have the same problem with Squarespace. I should point out that you have with iWeb, when you use proprietary tools like this, yes, it makes it much easier, but it also makes the site non-portable. And now Squarespace responds to that by saying, well, we've got exporters that will export to TypePad, Blogger, WordPress. These are all standard APIs, so that means you can kind of export to other places. iWeb doesn't do that at all. So in my opinion, the best thing to do is to bite the bullet and to design something in standard HTML, CSS that works across the web that's not proprietary. But that's also very hard. That takes a professional.
But starting from scratch, basically.
Almost. You at least have a design and functionality. Think of the iWeb site as your spec.
Right.
And that's actually a great play. That's one of the hardest things to do, in fact, with a website is to, they call them wireframes, is to design the flow, the look, the feel, often you'd get a designer to do that and they do it in Photoshop. It has no functionality. You can't click any buttons. It just looks like something. And then a web guy comes in and says, okay, well, let's translate this to web. And this is where you want to use standard web technologies, which are HTML, CSS, these cascading style sheets, JavaScript. And if you're going to do HTML, you're going to do HTML5, which is kind of the most modern HTML. You could, if you were an accomplished web pro, these are complicated technologies, recreate that site exactly. This is the difficulty that iWeb creates, is you've created a site that depends on iWeb, unfortunately.
Someone can just look at that site, a professional, and tell me whether or not it could be translatable easily.
I guarantee you it's translatable. Yeah, how much it's going to cost is another thing. Now, the unofficial Apple weblog, the chat room, has just given me a link to an article that came out a couple of days ago on TUAW. We'll put it in the show notes. 10 ways to replace iWeb and Mobile Me. So maybe this will have a suggestion, Rich. Y'all look at it and see if there's something that makes sense for you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazing price. That'd be a good gift for Dad. 866, the number 2, GetNet. 1-866, the number 2, GetNet, to get DSL Extreme. So what is this, Kyle? This is the big man. This is Clarence Clemens.
The big man in Jungle Land.
Yeah, Jungle Land. I interviewed him some years ago, and his sound is so distinctive. And I said, Clarence, it feels like your voice. It's coming through the horn. It's coming through the sax. Yeah, it's beautiful stuff. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the you're making me choke up now. You're choking me up here. We're talking about tech. Let me just complete the thought about iWeb, because it's a larger general thing, which is in tech in general, you have kind of two paths you can choose. You could choose a standards-based open path or a proprietary path. What does that mean? Well, proprietary is owned by a company. A good example of this would be Flash, which is owned by Adobe. You can design stuff in Flash, but you're always going to be at the mercy of Adobe. What Adobe does with Flash, where Adobe goes with Flash, it's proprietary. iWeb, good example. You can make beautiful stuff with Flash or iWeb, but it's owned by a company, and that company determines the future of what you do. The other fork in the road is open, non-proprietary stuff. That open means non-proprietary. Open means no one owns it. It's usually based on standards that are set by many companies, many different groups. The World Wide Web is an open standard. It's the set by a number of different groups, many of them companies like Apple and Intel and Adobe. But these standards are agreed upon, and all the software that works with it is standardized. And there's a real advantage to that, because if you develop a standard website using standards, that means other tools will be able to modify it, change it, work on it. You're not locked in. Proprietary is a lock-in. Now, often it's a sexy lock-in. It's a desirable lock-in, because look at iWeb. It made beautiful sites. It was easy. It was push-button. Boy, that really was appealing. But it was still a lock-in, you know. It was a candy-coated lock-in. Maybe a little bit harder to do a site using web standards like HTML5, CSS, JavaScript. But anything you do using those tools is open. Nobody owns it. Nobody can, you know, change it so that you can't change your site anymore. So it's always a better idea when you're creating something, particularly on the web, to choose open, I think. Maybe a little bit more challenging, but always a good idea. If you're tuning in to hear Scott Wilkinson, our home theater geek, he has the day off. He was here all day on Sunday. I hope you did hear that. And I want to thank Scott for doing such a great job. And he'll be back next Sunday to do the Tech Guy Show. So if you're stuck, if you have an iWebsite, a beautiful iWebsite that's working now, your choice really is to live with it, find another host for it, move it over there. You won't be able to, if iWeb goes away, you won't be able to edit it anymore. And I think all the indicators are that iWeb is not going to be developed by Apple any longer. So you're kind of, proprietary. You lock in and then they don't do it anymore. You're kind of out of luck. I wouldn't be surprised, though. I think somebody savvy is going to come along and write an iWeb exporter that will take an iWeb site and turn it into a standards-based site that you could then edit with other tools. I'd love to see that. I'd love to see somebody like Squarespace do that, so that if you have an iWeb site, you could push a button, it would move your site over to Squarespace, and you'd be able to continue to use the Squarespace tools. Now, a note, though, Squarespace is also proprietary. So, you know, the ideal would be to create it in a completely standard way, on a completely standard web server, that then you would never be locked in. You could always change it. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. Ron's next in San Mateo, listening to the great KGO in San Francisco. Hey, Ron.
Hey, Leo.
How are you?
I'm good. You had me going a little bit with that clearance talk.
Oh, man, brought a tear to my eye.
We were talking about it this morning. I was a little emotional myself.
Yeah, isn't it? People loved Clarence Clemens. He was a beloved figure.
Just a great guy.
Yep.
Great.
I wish I had a recording of that interview I did with him some time ago.
I have a 4-year-old iMac. Served me well. I have a new iMac coming in the next couple of days with a solid-state drive and a massive hard drive. And Apple doesn't seem to be real clear on helping transition. You know, they have their setup assistant and migration assistant. You know, bringing your old data over to the new machine.
But it's pretty straightforward. You shouldn't have any trouble.
Well, from what I'm reading, if you just say, okay, here's the solid-state drive, bring it in, it gets stuck because it says it's too small.
Well, yeah. It won't work on us. That's a good point. So you've got two drives in this new Mac, right?
Correct.
So what I would probably want to do is do the migration assistant Here's what you do, and I think it'll work fine. First of all, that new Mac is going to come with an operating system. Actually, this is an interesting question.
I'll tell you what they tell you, or what they say, is the operating system system and all the applications come on the solid-state drive.
That's right.
So, you know, I've got, of course, a lot of applications, some of which are duplicated in newer versions on the new machine.
Well, it's smart enough to not don't have to worry about that, for instance. It's not going to downgrade an app or downgrade your operating system. The real issue is you probably have more data on the old machine than you can get on this solid-state drive.
That's correct.
So I think...
I've got 16 gigs right now of apps, and my library shows about 33. I thought I would migrate those two over.
How big is the solid-state drive?
256.
Oh, you got plenty of space on there.
But I've got about 300 gigs of photos.
Images. Yeah, it's the data. So here's what you do. The migration assistant is granular to the point where you can open it up and say, don't do this, don't do this. So what you would do is you'll do the migration of everything.
Migration or setup, because when the machine first turns on it.
You'll go through the setup, and then the first thing it'll say is, are you upgrading from an older Mac? You say yes, but you want to go into the options. And if it doesn't give you the options, then go back out and say no, because you can run that migration assistant at any time. It's actually an application.
Okay.
So you can just boot up your machine, get it set up and running, and then run the migration assistant. You'll have to connect your old computer to the new one using a FireWire cable and use target disk mode. You can also do it via Ethernet, although that's much slower. And then you want to go in the options and say, don't restore this stuff. If it's just the photos that are that much space, you don't need the migration assistant. You can just copy them over.
Exactly. So I thought I would migrate the applications. And is it smart to put the library on the
Yeah, because the library is all your settings. Your library has to... Here's what I would recommend. Operating system and apps on the solid-state drive. You've got tons of room on there. And then your home directory and all your data, all your account directories, all your home directories should live on the second drive.
Okay.
That's the best place to do it. And your migration assistant will let you, I'm pretty sure will let you, I don't know, see, I've never seen it offer to put it, which drive to put it on. So that's an interesting question. You may not have the option to say, put that on the second drive, not the first drive. It may try to put it all on the boot drive, and obviously that's not what you want. If you can, I would just leave out the photos. You can copy everything onto the solid-state drive. It's okay, because then what you're going to do is you're going to change your user account to say, hey, the home directory is not on this drive, it's on the other drive. Copy everything over there, and then manually, while you've got the old Mac in target disk mode on FireWire, copy the photos over manually. Just drag them over.
Oh, that makes sense.
I think that's the best way to do it. You don't need to use a migration assistant, but it's nice because it saves all your settings. You don't have to reset up the internet and all of that stuff. All your preferences are saved. And I've never had a problem using it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Back when I was a child.
This makes me cry every time I listen to it.
Before life removed all the innocence.
Luther Vandross, I want to dance with my father again, something like that. Man, I just bawl my eyes out when I hear this one.
And dance with my mother and me. And
why'd you do that, Kyle?
Next hour will be upbeat.
Well, you know, I think a great... My dad's thankfully still alive, but I think a great many of us, especially people of my generation, are without our dads. And Father's Day is always a poignant day for us, but a good day to remember dad. A very good day to remember dad. As a father myself, I hope that I am remembered somewhat positively by my children. They're teenagers now, so they're not real fond of me. But that will change, I hope. 8888 Ask Leo, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking about web design. You know, I'm having a good conversation in the chat room about web design. We just don't know what's going to happen with iWeb and so forth. But let me talk about modern web design, because it's changed considerably. When I first started doing web pages, and maybe you too, we hand-coded those things in HTML. Remember that? You'd type bracket B, bracket, this is in bold, bracket slash B, bracket to bold text, things like that. We effectively, and this was the original design of the web, HTML stands for Hypertext Markup Language, We would take the content. This was the whole idea behind it. We take the content that we wanted, and we would use this markup to tell the browser, oh, make that bold, make that big, put a picture here, put a link there. We'd mark up the content. But what became obvious very quickly is that when you do that, you kind of you're mushing the content and the display in together into a single file. It's kind of hard to create content. You have to, you know, you have to do all these weird typing. It's like the old days in, remember in WordStar, where you'd put dot commands in there to tell the printer how to format your text. It's not ideal. What you'd really like is a word processor that is WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get. When you want something bold, you just drag your mouse across it and you press Command B or Control B, and now it's bold and it looks bold on the screen. And then somebody who's creating content, who's writing on the web, doesn't have to think about bracket B, bracket. It doesn't, you know, you don't want to think about that. You don't want to have to know HTML to write stuff for the web. So as the web became more modern, we separated formatting from content. It was a good thing. But it meant that web pages were no longer static text files that you loaded. Your homepage didn't just, you know, have a single file. It had to have two files. It had to have one file that contained formatting and then one file that contained the content. In fact, most of the time, the content wasn't even stored in a file. It was stored in a database. And that's how modern web pages work. You have really three parts to a modern web page. You have the design, usually stored in files called CSS files or cascading style sheet files. They use the CSS files to say, well, if you see this, it's bold. If you see this, it's that. And this looks this way. This, we always do this with the images, that kind of thing. That's all stored in, and it's a text file. You can read it. We also have a database that contains the posts. And usually there's some information in the database about formatting in the posts as well. And then finally, you have a third part, which is your content management system. It's a program running on the server that takes the posts, marries them with the formatting, and spits out a page for the reader. And it's done dynamically. It's done every time you go to a site like the New York Times or the USA Today. You're not just loading a static page. You're actually giving a command to the web server to build that page for you by merging the formatting commands with the content in the database to create a page, to build a page. And that's much more complicated, but it, you know, from the point of view of all the different pieces. But from the point of view of the designer, it's easier. He or she doesn't have to think about the content. From the creator of content, it's much easier. You can use a form that looks pretty much like a web word processor to write for the web. All of this runs in the background, and an engineer who's created the software can update the software and not worry about either content or formatting. So it's really a division of labor, and it works very well. But it does mean that for people who want to create their own websites, it becomes a little more complicated. We've talked about Squarespace before. They're a sponsor. Their WordPress.com is another one. TypePad.com, Blogger even does this. All of those are running a content management system. You can set up design templates ahead of time or use existing templates. And then when you post on Blogger.com or Squarespace or WordPress, you're just really posting in a web form that looks like a word processor. You don't have to think so much about the formatting. It gives you a much better result. It's easier for everybody involved, and it's modern. It separates the ideas. So that's the problem. When you've designed an iWeb page, you've kind of mushed it all back together again. And you're stuck with this tool, which is the only thing that understands what to do with this iWeb page. It's not for sure that iWeb is dead, but I think it's very likely. It doesn't seem like Apple's putting any effort into it. I think if you've been using iWeb or FrontPage or any kind of proprietary content creation tool, it would be a smart thing to somehow separate your content out and go somewhere where they've done this more modern thing of content management system, design files, and then the content. And you're going to have to do that once. We're going to do it with the Tech Guy site. I have a big redesign plan for the Tech Guy site. And, you know, if you go to techguylabs.com, you're looking at a content management system that's fairly primitive called a wiki. You've seen that Wikipedia is a wiki. The original idea of the Tech Guy site was that everybody could contribute content. We had to stop doing that because there were some vandals who were just continually messing it up. So I didn't make it accessible to the public, but James DeRuvo, who maintains this site, my sister, Frederique, here at the office, and I all have access to it and can modify it very easily using Wiki markup instead of HTML. And it's delivered, same thing. We have pages of content, pages of formatting, and then a content management system that delivers it to you. What that means is I can modify the look of the page very quickly. So what we're going to do is take all that content, 780 shows worth of content, manually, unfortunately, cut and paste all that content into a new content management system that'll be much more flexible and will allow you to participate. I'm looking forward to that. That's going to take a little time, but we will get there. And then for those of you who go to techguylabs.com and look at it and say, whoa, this thing is ancient. Yes, you're right. It's not modern web design. Hey, before we go to our next call, we do have lots of calls. I apologize for gabbing on and on. Glenn's next from Vancouver, Washington. He says, somebody put my phone number on the Facebook. How do I get rid of it? We'll talk about that in a second. But before we do that, I do want to remind you that backing up is probably the single most important thing you can do on your computer nowadays. We store so much important information, not just a computer, but on every device we have, that it's really important you back it up. You know, vacation's coming. You're going to take lots of pictures. You're going to put them on your computer. Have you got a strategy for protecting those valuable pictures, your financial records, your emails? Can I recommend Carbonite Online Backup? It's automatic. I trust them with my family photos and all my stuff because they're automatically backing my data up to the cloud where it's safe, it's encrypted, and I can get it anytime just by logging into my Carbonite account, even on a smartphone or an iPad. They've got free apps to do that, PC or Mac, and it's affordable, $59 a year for all the data on your internal drive. Flat rate, $59 a year, less than $5 a month. Now, I want you to try it and see if you like it. Go to Carbonite.com. Use my name, Leo, as the offer code. You'll get 2 weeks free. No credit card needed or anything. Just my name, Leo. Then if you decide to buy, use Leo again. You'll get 14 months for the price of 12. 2 months free. Carbonite.com. You got to back it up to get it back. So do it right with Carbonite. Glenn, Vancouver, Washington. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Glenn.
Hello, Leo.
So
thank you so much for your service that you do to folks like me that are very non-techie. I really do appreciate it.
Well, I try to make it non-techie. I realize sometimes we get caught in the weeds there, but I'm glad you can follow where we're going.
Yeah, but you can learn. I mean, I'm not learn. You can talk down to people like me to help me.
And
I'm trying to follow some other people that have interesting things, and then you start going beyond third Bardo. in my estimation, you know, it's like. But in any case, there's a local nightclub here in Vancouver, Washington, that has a Facebook website, and on their website, now once again, I'm very non-techie about this and have no idea about Facebook. My daughter's trying to help me with this, but they have their Facebook page. On their upper left corner, they have like what looks like a little poster of their shop, and then it has the proper phone number on it, and then down below on the bottom, there's like, you know, there, I think there's their address and another phone number for like the nightclub itself, and you can call that and get the bartender. And then there's another number that is an awful lot like the one in the poster in the upper left, but it's mine.
What?
And it's been going on for about 3 months.
Well, hang on the line, Glenn, and I'm going to see if I can help you. We've got to take a break for news. Wow. We'll see what we can do to help you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. A good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and your privacy online. My phone number, 888-ASK-LEO. Before the break, we started talking to Glenn, and I'm sorry, Glenn, that we had run out of time, so I'm glad you could hang on through the news at the top of the hour. So let me understand this, Glenn. So there's a nightclub in town that has a Facebook page, and on the Facebook page it's got the nightclub's phone numbers. Are they publishing your phone number by error?
Yes.
So they've got numbers, and I guess whoever designed the poster put the wrong number on there.
Well, there's like I was saying, there's on the when you're looking at the Facebook page, up in the upper left corner is like what looks what you would assume would be like a poster that you could see most anywhere. They just have a photograph of it, and that has the proper phone number for them. But then as you scroll down the page and get to the bottom down to where you can put in your own information, my phone number's there.
Oh, as their contact information.
Yes.
And when you contacted they don't want your number there. They want their number there. You're calling the nightclub and they get Glenn. That's not good for them either.
Yeah, and that's what I say. I got a hold of a fellow that says he's the manager, and he gave me his personal number, apparently. And I've got a hold of him only once and said, well, here, look, you know, I'm going to help you out with this. I'm really sorry. And so he said, here's my phone number. And you know, just to show that I'm really, truly, honestly want to get this dealt with. So every time I get a wrong number, I call and I just get a message machine and I leave a message. And I don't know if he's listening to him at all anymore.
So you're saying he's not cooperative. He's not.
Right. I mean, I don't get anywhere with him. So I call the nightclub and I get the barkeep and I ask for the manager. And he says, well, we don't have a manager here. And I'm saying, well, can I talk to the owner? Oh, he'll be in around 11 o'clock at night or something. And, well, you know, that happened about 3 or 4 times. And I finally got a hold of somebody they said was the owner. And I don't know if it's just a warm body in the
place. Yeah, I mean, I just don't understand why they – well, a couple of things. First of all, when you give your number on Facebook – I guess, no, Facebook does not verify, does it? It ought to verify, really, but it doesn't. So you can give any phone. You can put up any phone number as your contact information on Facebook. You know, I'm looking at Facebook's terms of service, and it says specifically you shall not give out other people's personal information on your Facebook page. So they are technically violating their own terms of service, and it's not in their interest. So what baffles me is that this nightclub doesn't care, because calls are going to you. Are you getting calls on your phone?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I got 4 last night.
Oh, my goodness.
As late as 15 till midnight.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
I mailed them a letter, and I was told that they got the letter. I don't know if it instantly went to the round file or
what. Have you posted on their Facebook page saying, guys, change the phone number. It's the wrong number.
The thing is, I'm not that hep on it, and I guess maybe I can, but I wanted to just, like, complain to Facebook themselves if I could.
Yeah, good luck on that. Well, yeah, it's a difficult thing when you have 700 million users.
Mm-hmm.
Tech support gets... I don't think there's any way to, contact Mark Zuckerberg directly. They probably do have a process. I don't know off the top of my head. Let's see. Here it is. It's facebook.com/terms.php. And how to report claims of, let's see. Well, I would go with claims of intellectual property infringement. I think that's the closest thing there is. You send a report to them, and that's going to get somebody's attention. You know, that's really designed for Universal Pictures to complain that some Facebook page has their movie on it. But they pay attention to it. So I'd start with that. The problem is that Facebook really, you know, they have so many users. How are they going to? Maybe you could report abuse. That might be another way to do it. Report abuse on Facebook. Somebody has posted my phone number on their page in error. This is another page. This is page 798 in their help. Probably you can do a report here. Send them a screenshot with the phone number. Maybe a picture of your phone bill to demonstrate that that's your phone number, not their phone number. Good luck getting a response. I don't know how quickly Facebook's going to respond to this. I imagine they have hundreds of people employed to respond to these things. But nevertheless, with 700 million users, it's going to be difficult. I think it's abuse. Their terms of service says you can't put somebody's personal information on your page. So I think you can report this page. Now, what may end up happening is the nightclub page may be taken down. Now, Facebook often responds immediately by just taking the page down. But you're going to want to send them information, which will include the page in question, a screenshot of your phone number on that page. I would say send a scan of a phone bill that demonstrates that that's your phone number, not theirs. and say they're publishing my phone number on their page. I've attempted to contact them many times. Please take their page down. That'll get their attention. Now, just from a pure technical point of view, there are other things you can do. You know, my phone number leaks out every few months. Leaks out. I accidentally show it on air or something. And what I use is Google Voice. It's a free service. You could have your phone number sent to Google Voice, and you can actually control what phone calls ring through to you. You could say, if this person is not in my contact list, I want them to go directly to voicemail. There are modern technological solutions if this fails. But I think this should work. I think you should be able to go to Facebook and say, they're violating terms of service. They're revealing my personal phone number on their page. Here's proof positive. I want you to shut them down. And, you know, I know enough people whose Facebook page have been shut down that this probably will work. You tried. You did the best you could. The next step would be to go to Facebook. And you know what? If Facebook doesn't respond, I think you could even pursue it in court as well. I'm not a lawyer. Well, what puzzles me is why the nightclub doesn't care about this. You're getting calls that they want. You're getting business they should have. I do love Google Voice. Voice.google.com. It's free. You can port your number to it. Use it to control. It's great. I don't get calls I don't want because of, you know, I just block them. Linda Irvine, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Linda. Wait a minute. I pushed the wrong button, didn't I? Okay. Let me try this again here. Hi, Linda. Welcome to the show. Now I pushed your button.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Hey, I'm trying to figure out how to permanently save or move from the iPhone into a computer or hard drive voicemails and texts. I lost someone that I love this week, and I'd like to save those.
I'm so sorry. I get this call from time to time. This is the last messages you received from this person.
Correct.
Texts you can forward. Voicemails are a little more tricky. There are, you know, of course you could just play it back into a recorder of some kind, but there are services that you can forward your voicemails, over to, and they will give you a recording of those, voicemails.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. New York Times has an article from a couple of years ago. I'll put a link in the show notes to a number of different, ways to, services to do this. You can also do a screen capture. Might not be a bad idea on the texts to, you know, you press the on-off button and the home button at the same time. It'll do a screen capture as an image. That's probably the best way to save the text because then you'll save them kind of as they were seen on your screen.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So you press, on the phone, there's the button on the top. That's the on-off button. And there's the home button in the bottom. You press them both at the same time. The screen will flash. That means you've saved that as a picture to your photo album.
Oh, I thought that rebooted the iPhone.
Only if you press and hold it too long. Just do it quickly. That'll save the text. And I think that's a nice way to do it. And then I'll give you some services that will save the voicemails. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Happy Father's Day, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you're on a Mac, we're thinking about ways to save voicemail from your iPhone. There's a great program I'd forgotten about, and thanks to the chat room for reminding me. But it does require a Mac. It's from a company called Ecamm, ECAMM.com. It's called PhoneView. And, you know, I've been using this program since it came out. It had a different name in the old days, but they've added capabilities. Essentially, what PhoneView does is it gives you access to the data on your iPhone, access that Apple normally does not give you. So you can back up your text messages, which can then be exported as text files or PDFs or XML. Again, I think for Linda, the best thing would be to do a screenshot, but this would be another way to get all your text messages. You can archive your iPhone voicemail to iTunes, which means you could play that message anytime. Linda, are you on a Mac or Windows?
I have iPad and I have Windows.
Okay. So unfortunately, this PhoneView software is for a Mac, but it would do that. I think we can find some. There used to be a bunch of services that did this, and I have to say I have to keep looking because most of these guys is gone. Let me look here to see if I can find another one for you. But do the screenshot thing. I think that's going to be the best way to save those text messages, because then you can see the back and forth. You can see it as it appeared on the screen.
Right.
That's how to download your voicemail messages. See, unfortunately, we're a lot of companies that did this, and I think most of them are disappeared. let me keep looking for you. I'm sorry about your loss, and I think that this is a really nice idea to save these. And I hear this a lot nowadays, that people have these messages.
They're pretty precious. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really nice to have those. Let me keep looking for you, Lynn. I don't see off the top of my head a good way to do this on Windows at the moment. Maybe the chat room. I like to get them involved. Can do some research for me. I see the Phantom Writers link. VoIP service plus phone recording software. Call your voicemail. Oh, I see what you're saying. So, yeah, actually, this is true. You could do this. A little complicated, but you use Skype to call your voicemail. Is that my phone? I guess it is. Use Skype to call your voicemail from AT&T. Can you do that with an iPhone? Can you call and get your voicemail? I think not anymore. But then record the Skype call. That would be one way to do it. I'm going to keep looking. Google Talk. But can you call an iPhone? This is funny because I think that this visual voicemail means you cannot call the iPhone or call the voicemail anymore. You can't get visual voicemail, can you? You can just call the regular voicemail number from any phone to get the voicemail on an iPhone. Okay. Thank you, Knox Harrington. So there, that's a good way to do it. Google Voice would let you do that. You just basically call it, get your voicemail, and record as you listen to the audio. Google Talk has built-in recording, as a matter of fact, so you should be able to do that. It's a little tricky, but yes, you can do it, Linda. I think that's really a good idea, great idea. Errol in Ontario, Canada, you're next. Hi, Errol. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo, long-time viewer, long-time, even further back, listener, former broadcaster, podcaster. I have an oddity. I just downloaded the latest updates for XP, and all my icons in the tool tray have disappeared, and I'm reasonably savvy and have not been able to find where on earth, A, they've gone, and B, how to put them back. And I was wondering if I'm the only one that's had that problem with the latest XP updates.
Not only are you not the only one, I think somebody called last week with the same missing icon problem. Are all the icons gone? You have a blank desktop, or...
No, in the tool tray next to the clock.
And it's not even the whole system taskbar. It's just the stuff over on the right that's disappeared.
It's just over there on the right, yeah.
And you don't see by any chance a little double arrow icon?
The drop down?
Yeah.
Or the pop up? Yeah, yeah. I do see that. And I see, everything that's on my desktop is in that drop down.
But in the system tray, this was something that they added later. But I'm wondering if the XP upgrade did it. You can click the little double arrows and say what other things that are hidden in the system tray. I wonder if that's there, because you can hide inactive icons. I don't know why they would suddenly be hidden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on the reboot, they all disappeared, and the only thing I have in there is I forced antivirus to show up there, and time and temperature by opening the program, the app.
Yeah, it sounds like what happened is that the XP upgrade, was it Service Pack 3? What was the upgrade that you...
Service Pack 3 and all the latest security updates.
Yeah, service packs tend to mess things up somewhat.
I've had Service Pack 3 on for quite a while.
All right.
Since it first came out, so it was just the latest updates from Microsoft.
I would say what you probably want to do is right-click on the taskbar at the bottom there and select Properties. And you'll see at the bottom a checkbox for Hide Inactive Icons.
Not checked.
Not checked. Well, you want to uncheck that, and you're saying it's not checked.
It's not checked, no.
All right. Well, then you want to look at the customize button to its right and see if, you know, you've got a bunch of stuff hidden. That's that double arrow I was talking about. When the icons are hidden, you get a little left-pointing double arrow that says, you know, here's where the rest of the icons are. If they're not showing up there, it sounds like some are and some aren't. Is that correct, Errol?
Well, after the restart, there was nothing showing there, and I had to open up the antivirus program and my time and temperature.
Sounds like the stuff wasn't starting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, so then I think what you probably want to do is... you've tried restarting the machine, obviously, yes?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it just doesn't start ever. It sounds like what happened for some reason is the stuff that would normally start up has been told not to start up. I think what you do is should click the start icon, start button, and select run, and type msconfig, msconfig. And you can then look at, there's a tab in there for what things start up. It sounds like all of the normal things that start up in the background, for some reason, have stopped. It may be that the, there's different ways to get these to start up in the registry, and there's a startup folder that you can put stuff into that will automatically start it. There are various ways to do this. It sounds like somehow in that update, those got all turned off. So I'd run msconfig and take a look at what's showing up in that startup tab and click the ones that you want to have start up. Truthfully, I think not having things start up when you start up the machine is not a bad idea. But obviously, you do want your antivirus. You'd like to see your clock and calendar, things like that. Sounds like you had a problem with the update. Thanks for the call, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. For Father's Day there. Thank you, Kyle. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazing price. Call 866, the number 2, GetNet, to get DSL Extreme. Leanne Rimes? Who was that?
Sugarland.
Sugarland. I love them. Don't know their music, but I love them. Hey, we found, thanks to the chat room, well done, chat room. We found three different sites that will help you save your voicemails. Of course, now, one way to get the voicemails is just be recorded. Plug in a cable into your phone and into your sound card and record it that way. You could use Skype to call your voicemail, record it that way. But these are services that are specifically for saving voicemails. We found some. This is SaveMyVM.com. None of these are free, unfortunately. But maybe they're easier. SaveMyVM.com. SaveThatCall.com. 50 cents plus 5 cents a minute. And then you use three-way calling. So what they'll do is you basically make a call to SaveThatCall.com. You merge that with your voicemail call, and then it'll record for you. And VoicemailsForever.com. That's $30, and you get 120 minutes of voicemail recording time. But all of these, you know, maybe they'll make it easier for you, but I think that there's plenty of ways to do it without spending any money at all using Skype, that kind of thing. But maybe those are three or four of you. And I'll tell you what, we'll put links to that and all sorts of other stuff, including this phone view program. If you're a Mac person, this is great for $20. Gives you a lot of additional features on our website, which is TechGuyLabs.com, TechGuyLabs.com. So that's to help Linda out get those voicemails off her iPhone. Mike in Fullerton, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I am fantastic. How are you?
Good, thanks. Happy Father's Day.
Thank you. You too.
Quick question. Have been a longtime user of Carbonite.
Great.
And did a nice backup. And have a secondary drive for all my music and stuff, on site, but a second drive. and reformatted my iMac because I wanted to change the partition size. It's a dual boot with Boot Camp.
Okay.
However, when Carbonite reloaded, I figured out that over the years and years, I've got like 7 or 8 layers of my profile in there. Mike One PC.
Yeah, I mean, Carbonite's going to do the right thing, which is try to save everything, and it doesn't know which one's the one you want.
I'm just wondering, is there an easy way to go in and figure out where my iPhone and all the other stuff is? Because
I have no idea
which one it's under, and all my music and everything is all saved. And I can point to that directory on my secondary, my USB drive, secondary drive. But all those backups, and in order for it to recognize the iPhone and iPad and all that other stuff, I think it's all under the Apple, in your documents profile.
That's right. It's your home. It's in your home directory.
Well, I'm not sure which one of
but
those
which is. Home is it? Mike, Mike one, Mike two, Mike three, Mike four, Mike five.
Right, and I'm thinking to myself, boy, maybe somebody else in the future will run into this, and we can save them the trouble of overwriting each one with a. Oh well, I'm just going to create a whole new profile then and save it all over.
That's an interesting question. How to figure out which one of these home directories is the most recent one? I mean, it sounds like what it's done is it's almost given you versions.
Oh, gosh, yeah. It's given me layer upon layer that are going back several years. So I'm not sure if it's the same one, and it's just got that old date on it that just keeps moving,
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the features that Carbonite has that's nice, which is that, and it's designed really not so much for disaster or what you did, but for a case where somebody threw out a version of the file and then wanted to go back. It does some versioning for you. Do the timestamps different, or are they all current? In other words,
it looks like as I'm looking through each of my 77. No, I'm just kidding. But like 5 or 7 or 8 different versions, they all look like they all have the same timestamp or date stamp, roughly.
Yeah.
The same one, and I'm wondering, is it possible that it just carries that date
happened is that date is probably the restore. Is it the restore date? Or is it an older date than that?
No, it's a couple of years old.
Oh, that's interesting. That's the creation date, probably. So I think the only way to do this is you're going to have to slowly, one by one, I mean, there's only, 7, so it's not going to take forever. Look at the home folder, each home folder, and look at... the data that's stored in each home folder, and you're going to want to find the most recent one.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I'm doing. I'm trying to collect them all now onto a third drive.
Well, that's a pain.
Yeah, that's a real pain.
I'm not really sure what happened. It does sound like it's version. Are they all the same, roughly the same size?
They are roughly the same size, and all within a 6 or 8 month period of the year I got the phone. So I got the 3GS. So about that year.
So you're talking specifically about the iPhone backup itself.
So when I plug it in, that I get it to recognize and then not try to wipe and get my profile for that phone.
This is something actually Apple does. When you back up your iPhone, every time you connect it to sync it, it backs it up once a day. It keeps many copies. So when you do a restore, you'll get a drop down that says which one do you want to restore from.
Okay.
So I don't think that may not be Carbonite. If you're just talking, it sounds like, did Carbonite duplicate all your home folders? Or are you just saying that you have multiple iPhone backups?
No, I've got multiple home, each time it restored. In other words, when I reinstored the form and formatted, and this goes back multiple years, as I formatted because of a bad drive or whatever, called the operating system, I create a new user account, and then it goes in and tries to find it.
Restores the whole thing, yeah.
All of the old stuff, right? And so each layer has created a new user account on top of the last one. So literally, it's Mike, Mike PC, Michael, Michael X, Michael Y, you know what I mean? Just one upon one. And then many of them have the same data in them, I found, as I've been spending hours.
Yeah, I think there's probably just duplicates all the way down the line. What a mess. Oy, yay, yay.
Yeah. Maybe, uh, maybe, maybe stick with the same user ID is about the best. Create a new profile and a new install.
Well, it's saving everything, right? It's just trying to do the right thing. It's better that than you calling me and saying it didn't save it. So it just saved too much.
It's all me.
Yeah.
I'll start to maybe I'll look at the restore side of it and see if it knows. If I start drilling through each of the profiles, maybe the restore side will be able to figure out which one's the most recent restore and then bring it up from there.
Yeah, I mean, all I could think of is a time and date stamp, and there are two time and date stamps. There's one with the file was created date. It sounds like that's what you're looking at, but there's also a file modified date. You might look at the most recent file modified date. That should tell you which is the most recent backup, and that's the one you'd want to use, I think. So don't look at the created date. Those are the ones that are a couple of years old. Look at the modified date. This is a problem sometimes with backup and restore is that, and it's kind of file system dependent. The restore will often change the date of the restored file to the date you restored it, which is really not what you want. You want it to preserve the original file modification dates, the timestamps. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll take more calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Kyle Benham at the controls. Who's on the phone? Is it Gina?
Salvati.
Gina Salvati. Back from her travels on the phones today. 888-827-5536 is a toll-free number. Anywhere in the U.S., outside the U.S., Skype that'll do. Just give us a ring. 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's go to West Covina, California. Ivan, you're next.
Hey, Leo. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, Ivan. Thanks for calling.
You may be Leo to millions of people, but you'll always be DevNull to me.
Thank you.
Hey, happy Father's Day. Wanted to also say great webcast on the future of work. Really enjoyed that one.
Oh, I'm glad you attended. Did you see it live or did you see the recording?
I saw it live.
Thank you so much. You know, the way it's set up, there's so many people. I think there are 300 people. This is a thing I did for the Go to Assist people, the Citrix people last week, that I couldn't really see all the questions coming in. So it felt very much like a speech. It was a strange experience.
Well, it was really good. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Also wanted to tell you, my son got me a Father's Day gift of one of your bricks.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great. I'm happy about that.
That's
one.
Really sweet. We're selling, we're building a new studio, New Tech Guy Labs. Actually, we call it the Twit Brick House because it's a beautiful brick facade. And it's a 10,000 square foot facility that'll house this studio, but also all the other sets for all the other shows that I do. I do about 20 shows now. And we should be in it in a month, but in order to raise a little money, because it ended up costing a lot more than we thought, we've been selling commemorative bricks on the wall. And we've sold over, I think, almost 1,000 now. And a lot of them are, to Dad and stuff like that. I think it's just such a nice idea, Ivan.
Yeah, it's great. And now DevNull will live on.
Oh, is that what it says? What does it say?
I don't know yet. He told me I've got to figure out what.
Well, you got to come visit it because it's out. It'll be in the foyer as people come in and you can visit your brick. People want to know more. We have a link on the Tech Guy site, thetechguylabs.com, if you want to know more about that. So what can I do for you, Ivan?
Okay, well, I got a question about using MAC addressing on my router.
Okay.
I've been trying to, get it a little more secure and everything, and so I thought I'd do that, but now it seems like if I turn MAC addressing on, I have to do it for everything, both wired and wireless.
And yeah, that may be in the case. I'll be honest with you. So this is called MAC address filtering. It's not MAC as in Macintosh computer. It's MAC as in MAC, the MAC address. Every network device in the world has, in theory, a unique MAC address. And so MAC address filtering is a form of security on a wireless network that says by the way, it's not really very secure, and I'll explain why in a second. But that says only a network device with this MAC address can use this router. Seems like that would be really secure, doesn't it? In fact, sometimes universities use it. I've been at conferences where you have to, and it's a pain. You have to bring your computer there, and they register your MAC address, which is this long number, and they add you, and now you can use it. Seems like a good idea, right? Well, turns out it's not very secure. Every packet that is sent wirelessly has the MAC address in it. Of course it does. Otherwise, the router wouldn't know who you are. But it's in the clear. It's not encrypted. And it's easy to spoof a MAC address. Almost all computers have software that let you say, pretend my MAC address is this. So it's completely useless security. So turn it off. You don't need it. And it's a pain in the butt, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the only security that matters on a wireless access point, it is absolutely sufficient. It's absolutely the only one that works, is turning on WPA encryption. Not WEP, that's the older style, and that actually is cracked. That was easy to get through. MAC address filtering doesn't work. Hiding the SSID, sometimes people do that. That doesn't work. WPA, in fact, best to use WPA2 encryption.
Okay.
And then it's pretty simple. When you turn that on, you'll establish a password. The first time any machine logs in, you have to enter the password, but it remembers it from then on. It has two great advantages. One, you have to have the password to use that system, period. So that is effective. Use a good password. Nobody's going to guess it. Two, it encrypts all the traffic. You know, MAC address filtering does not. That's the problem. All the traffic's unencrypted, and that's how I can see the MAC address. So turning on WPA2 has an additional benefit of making sure that nobody can spy on you as your packets flow through the air. And your wired computers won't need it.
Yeah, I've had the WPA on as
good.
Well.
That's belt and suspenders. Yeah, it doesn't. MAC address filtering does nothing. The truth is, you don't need it at this point because you got WPA2 turned on, so nobody can get in. The MAC address filtering adds no layer of security at all.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, not necessary. I go around when I see places, institutions, and so forth using it, and I want to tell them, just stop. It's not doing any good.
Well, this institution's going to stop.
Good.
One quick question on Facebook.
Yes.
If I upload pictures and or movies to my Facebook site, does Facebook own them as well?
You know, this is something that's been coming up lately because license agreements, if you read them, and nobody does, almost always say something like, the company owns all rights to any of your posts. And that's usually done to protect the company. Facebook doesn't want to own your movie or pictures. What are they going to do with them? But what they do put that language, often do put that language in. I don't know about Facebook particularly. Recently, people were complaining about a site called TwitPic. That's a photo sharing site. Almost always, it's put in by lawyers who are bending over backwards to protect their clients. And they say that so that they can't get in trouble for storing copies of it on their server, for having multiple copies in multiple places for backups, things like that. I can promise you Facebook has no interest in reselling your movie.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah, this comes up almost all the time, and usually companies respond to it by rewriting their terms of service. Facebook has recently redone their terms of service by putting it in plain English. What? Yeah, so everybody can read it. They've translated it out of the lawyerese, and I think that's right. You know, there was in 2009, a couple of years ago, a furor over Facebook saying essentially what you just talked about. We have the right to do anything we want with your content. But in my opinion, that's not really the purpose of that. It's, you know, this was the text that people got upset about. You hereby grant Facebook an irrevocable perpetual, non-exclusive, transferable, fully paid, worldwide license with the right to sub-license to A, use, copy, publish, stream, store, retain, publicly perform, or display, transmit, scan, reformat, modify, edit, frame, translate, excerpt, adapt, create derivative works, and distribute through multiple tiers any user content you post. A lawyer wrote that. And the reason there's all those words in there, the lawyer just wants to make sure that there's no possible way they could get in trouble for doing anything. But they're not going, what are they going to do with your picture? They're not, they don't want it. It's just to protect them. Because of that furor, Facebook kind of rewrote their terms of service and backed down on that. Lawyers have one job, to protect their clients. And so they're going to always write these agreements in the most extreme way possible. But that's to protect them against a lawsuit, not because they want to go out. And I remember we used to, when we had people show up as guests on our show, we'd give them a release they'd have to sign that basically said we could do anything with your image we want. You know, that was just to protect us. We weren't going to do anything with it. And I think that you don't have to worry so much about Facebook. They're not going to sell your pictures. I think they did rewrite it. And if you go to Facebook now, they have rewritten. This agreement was written in English. This is right at the beginning. To the extent any translated version of this agreement conflicts with the English version controls. And they have tried to write it in plain English so that you can read it and understand it. They did change their agreement to say you own all of the content and information you post on Facebook. You control how it is shared. And they're very clear that they're not asserting a right to it. Other sites still have old language that says we own everything. But it's always just to protect them from lawsuits. That's all. We're going to take a break. Come back with more. Your news is next. Leo Laporte. I am the tech guy. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, 88-88-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, if you'd like to talk high tech with me, I'd love to talk high tech with you on this Father's Day. Not just dads who love technology, by any means. But I think a high tech gadget is always a good gift for dad. Usually, anyway. 88-88-ASK-LEO. So if you want some help with that, or maybe you got a high-tech gift and you want some help with that, that's what I'm here for. Bruce Fremont, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, hello?
Hey, Bruce. How are you? Welcome.
Okay. How you doing?
Very good. What can I do for you today?
Well, I got a whole list here. You might shut
You got a honeydew for me, huh?
Yeah.
All right. First fire away.
I'm 68, and I want to simplify. And I got 40,000 pictures, slides, whatnot.
Wow.
And I got a PC. I've never had a Mac. But I'm after I see that Lion works, you know, by August 1st, you'll probably know.
Yeah.
I'm planning on getting an iMac 27.
Oh, you're going to love it. That thing is a sweet machine.
Yeah, and... And then I just want to use iPhoto and Aperture, nothing else.
Okay.
I'm planning on getting your Nod 32 and Carbonite.
Okay.
Okay, now, what's the best email program for me?
Apple comes with, all the Macs come with Apple Mail, which is, I think, a very nice email program, frankly. I think it gets the job done. It's what I use, and I get a lot of email, as you might imagine.
Yeah, I bet you do. And so, okay, you made my mind up on that.
You don't need to buy one. I mean, there are great other choices. Thunderbird, I'm sorry, from the Firefox folks is excellent. In fact, on Windows, that's my preferred email client. But because I want something basic and simple that will do all the filtering I need, that will make it easy to read email. There is a program, new program on the Mac. You'll find it in the App Store called Sparrow that's designed really for people who use Gmail to give you a Gmail-style interface on the desktop. I use it, but I like Mail. Apple Mail, that's the program.
Okay. That's a good one. Now, I've decided to go all Apple, you know, in my life. And so I'm going to need a laptop. And I'm wondering, I figure there's going to be a lot of new laptops or a lot of rebuilt Mac laptops available.
I wouldn't get a rebuilt only because laptops tend to take more abuse than desktops. So buying a used laptop is really buying somebody else's problems. The good news is Apple offers an excellent, since you already have a powerhouse on the desktop, your laptop is really just about kind of getting around, right? And I would recommend, believe it or not, the $999 MacBook Air.
Oh, yeah?
Because it's super light. It's not you're going to be your workhorse. You're going to go home and use your desktop for that. This is for going to the coffee shop or traveling or whatever. It's not a big hard drive. It's only 64 gigabytes. So you can't put all your photos, all those 40,000 photos on it, but you'll have those on the iMac. This is more for... Yeah, and actually you probably will have it on iCloud, in which case you'll be able to look at it or put it on Picasa Web, or there are lots of places to store these, Smug Mug, Flickr, and so you'll have access to them. I love the MacBook Air. I wouldn't necessarily say it's a good first computer, but since you already have a powerful desktop, it's a perfect portable. Now, there is a rumor, and it's only a rumor because Apple never says ahead of time, that the MacBook Airs will be updated in the same time frame that Lion comes out. Which means, as you know, in the next month. So I wouldn't run out and buy an Air today. I'd wait at least to see if that rumor is true. There is an update they could make. The Air, as it stands right now, is a fairly slow 1.6 gigahertz Core 2 Duo. And I think everybody agrees that they'll make a Sandy Bridge-based MacBook Air, an i5-based MacBook Air.
Slow is what I have now.
Yeah, if you have an old computer, anything is going to be faster.
10-year-old PC, and nobody will even look at the screen. You know, they just yell at me.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. You know, one nice thing somebody's pointing out, when you come home with the MacBook Air, you can plug it into your 27-inch iMac screen and use the screen for the Air, which is kind of handy. And I'll tell you, the big speed difference on the Air isn't the processor. It's a middle-of-the-road 1.6 gigahertz Core 2 Duo. It's the solid-state drive, which makes that thing feel like my fastest computer, even though it's far from it. A fast hard drive makes such a big difference.
Okay. And, all right, you've answered my questions. The last one, how long should Lion be out before...
You can get it right away. It's been in developer release for some time. It will be pretty stable. It's rare Apple has a problem with its OS X releases.
Yeah.
Yeah, so here's the good news. Any Mac you buy today, you'll get a free upgrade to Lion. Even if you don't, it's $30, and it upgrades as many computers as you have. So it'll be a very straightforward upgrade. Apple is not like Microsoft in that regard. Basically, with Windows, most people don't upgrade their operating system until they buy a new computer. You get a new version of Windows when you get a new computer, and that's it. It's very different in the Apple world. I'm not sure why. It's a cultural thing, but most Apple users buy every update.
Uh-huh.
And at $30, there's really no reason not to. Lion is going to be very sweet.
Yeah, well, so far, you've been making me feel good.
Yeah, I think you're on the right, you're spending the kids' inheritance, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. That's what, I mean, I can't, if I left this crap that I have, you know, I have boxes and boxes and boxes.
It's time. It's time. Now, I have to say, scanning 40,000 slides and pictures is not going to be something you'll want to do. I ended up, but I had not that many. I had 1,000 slides that I really wanted to get digitized, and I paid a service to do that, and I was very glad I did. They cleaned them, they color corrected them, and they came out beautifully. Now I have them.
We're just waiting for that.
You know, it's going to rain. It's not cheap. I think it ended up being 35 cents a slide, maybe 50 cents a slide. It wasn't cheap. But it was worth it because it takes time to scan these things.
Uh-huh.
And 40,000, I don't know. I think the first thing you want to do is pare it down a little bit.
Yeah. I've got a good 30,000 prints.
Wow.
And I figure I'll get a, you know, get a copy stand and, you know, just...
Well, that's the fast way to do it. You know, you can get a scanner, but a scanner takes, you know, 30 seconds per print. But if you get it exactly as you say, if you get a copy stand, you light it just right and you use a digital camera, you can actually get a very good quality copy of that. I would save the prints. I wouldn't throw them out.
Oh, I'm going to save them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I've got to build some... slideshows and DVDs.
Yeah, this is a good. That's actually you're absolutely right. A good way to do it. You take your digital camera. You get a shutter release. You put the camera on a tripod. The picture's on a stand. You have it lit. You put a picture in there. Press the shutter release. Put another picture in there. Press the shutter release. It's a second an image instead of 10 seconds or 30 seconds an image. It's a lot faster.
Yeah. A guy actually told me. He said that what you do is you buy a used copy stand.
Perfect.
You know, with lights and everything else.
Perfect.
On eBay.
Yep.
And you transfer all your stuff and then you sell it on eBay.
Yeah, you don't need it anymore. Now, slides are going to be a different issue, as you know, so will negatives, but those prints will be pretty easy.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Hey, enjoy your new gear, Bruce. Call me when you get it, and happy Father's Day.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Take care. That's quite a project. 40,000 prints. 30,000 prints. Yes, if you have the time, of course, it's better to scan. Best yet, to scan the negatives. But, you know, the best negative scanners out there, you're going to be able to do maybe 5 or 6 negatives at a time. It's gonna take a long time. Awful long time. 8888-ASK-LEO. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
To the honeys getting money, playing fellas like dummies.
Really, this is my son's request for Father's Day, huh? Kyle, you know my son very well.
I'm going to have to fade it. I think that's all I can play.
That's all we can play. That's right. Right? Stop right there. Once again, with the great music, Kyle Benham. Thank you, Kyle. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. We're talking about all this great technology that's changing our lives and making life miserable for some of us. Danny's in Pasadena. Hi, Danny. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Good to talk to you again.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you today?
Yeah, I was a guy that called a while back asking about how you remove an item when they search for you under Google.
Yeah.
And you told me there was pretty much nothing I can do about it.
Pretty much, yeah. Stuck, as we say.
Yeah. All right, so... I have a Toshiba here. I was told by the previous owner that it's a 2004. And I think I heard you say in the previous call that when you buy a new computer, you pretty much get a new operating system on a PC.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a brand new computer. Usually, so on a 2004 computer, you'd be best using the operating system that computer came with, right?
Right. It came with the Windows XP.
That's right. I'd stay with Windows XP.
Okay. I've heard you say in the past that it's going to be, like, the updates are going to be discontinued.
So the deal with Windows XP is you have to get to Service Pack 3 now, which is easy. It's free. Just do it. And they will Microsoft will continue to support Windows XP for a few more years. So you're all right, but they won't support Service Pack 1 or 2. You have to be Windows XP Service Pack 3, and then you're fine. They're going to continue to offer security updates, patches. In some ways, you're safer on XP. Get this. In some ways, you're safer because XP, Microsoft has been patching that thing for years, and by now, they've pretty much fixed all the holes, or at least that's, you know, what I would assume. It's rock solid, and you're probably safer on it than any other version of Windows.
Oh, wow. How do I get to Service Pack 3? Because I'm not familiar. I've never heard
of this. So you're going to get online. Are you online with the Toshiba?
I'm not online right now.
All right. So that's how – two ways to get it. One is for you to get online, you know, if it's probably got Wi-Fi built into it, so you could go to a coffee shop or somewhere with open access, and then you'll run there. You'll see in the start menu there's something called Windows Update. You'll run that, and you may have a number of patches that you want to apply. You'll keep applying patches till there's nothing more. All the critical updates are downloaded. You're probably, your first thing will be Service Pack 3. That kind of gets you all the patches up to modern times, and then and any additional patches you'll get then. If you can't get online, then you will have to get a friend to download it, put it on a disc for you, a CD or a USB key, and install it that way. The truth is, if you don't go online, none of this is really that important. The only way people really attack you is via the internet. So either an email or by a malicious website, that kind of thing. If the safest way to use a computer is just to disconnect from the internet. The only way then somebody could attack you is by physically accessing your computer, and I presume you're keeping an eye on that. But if you ever plan to go online, absolutely, you want to make sure you have all the critical updates. And that's not just XP, that's any version of Windows. Make sure you update it. And Microsoft does, they call it the end of support. They do end of life their operating systems after a period of time. You can't get updates for Windows 98 or Windows ME or 95 anymore. It doesn't make sense for them to continue to support it. But XP is still alive for a few more years, so do get all those updates. And your next computer, you'll get a new version of Windows, as most Windows users do. Larry, San Francisco, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Larry.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I am well. How are you?
Good. Love your show.
Thank you.
Quick question for you. So I've got an old HP with XP on it, and recently sometimes when I turn it on, it doesn't boot properly into XP. If I turn it on and off a few times, it seems to start up okay, but I'm getting worried maybe there's something wrong with the disk and that it's going to die on me, so I thought I would check with you, see what you thought.
Yeah, that's a good guess. It's either the disk. Sometimes other things can go wrong. Older computers, there were problems with bad capacitors for a while, leaky capacitors. That could cause problems. Sometimes if it's a cold solder, that means a solder that wasn't properly made, the computer doesn't work right until it heats up a little bit. So sometimes starting it up a couple of times actually is warming up the motherboard and fixing that cold solder, and then it'll boot. There's a lot of reasons this could happen, but most often, especially since this computer's been working fine until now, it's a hard drive that's starting to get a little bit flaky, and it's just not booting every time.
So what should I do? Should I replace the hard drive then?
It's an older computer. I wouldn't put a lot of money into it. But
right.
It may be difficult, depending on how vintage this computer is, it may be difficult to find a hard drive that's compatible with it.
Actually the drive that's in there, I think
SATA drive?
It's a SATA drive.
Okay, yeah, they won't have any problems. It's the older IDE hard drives, it's getting harder and harder to find them. There's a couple of things you could do.
So if I get a new drive, is there a way just to image it so I don't have to reinstall
So all the companies that make external, or rather replacement hard drives, offer, usually on their website, Western Digital, Seagate, Hitachi, they offer a bit copy program you can use. They have different names for it. I think Western Digital calls it their Western Digital Tools, that will take... You put the new drive in as a secondary drive, if there's room, and you run this tool. It'll bit copy the original drive to the new drive. Then you could take out the original drive, leave the new drive in, and it'll boot just as if it was the old drive on there.
So it has to be the same size then?
Nope. It could be bigger. In fact, it should be bigger.
I'd get a bigger drive.
Yeah, you'd be crazy getting the same size.
Right. Well, it's like a 600-gig drive.
Yeah. Nowadays, you'll be getting a terabyte at least for sure.
So is there any utility I could run to see if the drive's going bad?
Yeah, I mean, it depends how it's going bad. Almost always when this is happening, it's because you have data on the drive that is on a sector that isn't 100%. It's not always readable. If that's the problem, then there's a program, $90 program. It's more expensive than a new drive, but any good shop should have it, called SpinRite. My friend Steve Gibson wrote it. And all it does is what SpinRite is it's more tenacious than the operating system. The operating system will try a few times to read a flaky sector, but then it gives up. Obviously, it has to, otherwise your system would be really slow. SpinRite never gives up. So it just keeps trying and trying and trying until it reads the data. If it finally can read that data intact, it'll move it to a known good sector and it'll mark that flaky sector bad by doing that, and it may only be 150, 20, 10 sectors that it has to do that to. In effect, it refreshes the drive. It eliminates any sectors that are not 100%, moves everything to sectors that are 100%, and suddenly the drive works fine. So SpinRite is a good first step. Again, I don't know if it's worth it for this one drive. It's $90. If it's a file system error, then that's really reinstalling Windows would fix that. SpinRite doesn't look at file systems. It just looks at sectors.
You know, if I push the boot menu, you know, I think the HP screen, there's an option, I think F10,
right,
to go to the boot menu.
Right.
When it's not working, that drive isn't even appearing. It doesn't even seem
to be. Yeah, it sounds like the drive's starting to fail. I think you should copy it as quickly as you can and put a new drive in there. Absolutely. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
To make a change, just relax, take it easy. You're still young, that's your fault. There's so much you have to know. Find a girl, settle down.
I love this song.
If you want, you can marry. Look at me.
A father's advice.
I am old, but I'm happy.
This Father's Day. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Carbonite.com. You got my advice to you. Is back it up. You got to back it up to get it back, so do it right with Carbonite. Visit Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Leo on a PC or a Mac, and you will be getting the best backup there is. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. And our next caller is from Vista, California. Vicky is on the line. Hi, Vicky. Welcome to the Tech Guy.
Hi, Leo. Happy days.
Thank you.
To you. And thank you so much for taking my call.
Well, my pleasure. What can I do for you today?
Actually, I'm old and I'm not computer literate, and I don't know more than half of what my kids tell me.
Well, don't sound so sad about it. They don't know half of what you know. Right?
Well, that's true. But... In this world, you know, they're a lot more literate than I am. Anyhow, what I'm interested in is I have a son that saved his pennies and he bought an iPod or an iPad Touch, one of them. I don't know what it is, but he saved his pennies and he bought it, and he gets all the internet for free. And I asked him, "How in the world are you doing that?" And he says, "Well, I have we have Wi-Fi connection." And then he told me that all of our neighbors have all their Wi-Fi connections blocked.
Yeah.
And mine's not.
And he's so using your Wi-Fi?
Yeah, I don't know anything about Wi-Fi.
Is this your son or your grandson?
No, my son.
Your son.
And I don't have a problem with that, but I just want to know if there's a security issue.
Yes, there is. Because if he's using your Wi-Fi, others could as well.
Right, and I just want to know whether or not, and I asked him, I said, you know, I probably should call my internet company and put a password on it.
It's not them, it's you.
Don't do that.
Yeah, he doesn't want you to do it because he keeps wanting to steal your Wi-Fi.
Right.
Well, if you put a password on it, you can give the password to your son, and then he can continue to use your Wi-Fi, which is good. But the kids down the street can't, because I can guarantee you if you're the only unprotected Wi-Fi in your neighborhood, he's not the only one using it.
Well, I agree to that, but I don't know if that's an issue. I mean, can they steal stuff from me, or can I let them all have my Wi-Fi access?
You know, for years, I didn't protect my Wi-Fi. I felt like I was just being neighborly. Let people use my Wi-Fi. And if you trust everybody in your neighborhood, yeah, it's probably all right. I'll tell you what the risks are. You do or don't trust you?
Well, I don't know anybody in my neighborhood, but I know that probably 50% of them don't have access to computers, and maybe, I just don't know what information.
Well, let me tell you what the risk is, and you could decide whether it's worth it.
Okay.
So there's a couple of problems. One is, and this is not at all uncommon, is people who are using your Wi-Fi may be doing things you don't approve of, even things that could get you in trouble. I'll give you a good example. Recently, federal agents burst into a fella's home, pinned him to the ground, and started calling him a child pornographer. He couldn't figure out what was happening. It turned out it wasn't him. It was somebody using his Wi-Fi without his knowledge. So people could use your Wi-Fi to do illegal things, and you might be liable. The record industries could sue you. In fact, would, if they decided to. That's who they sue, the person who owns the Internet access. If somebody's stealing music or downloading BitTorrents of movies, you could end up getting a... Now, the truth is, that's rare. Most of the time, at worst, what you'd get is a letter from your Internet service provider saying, it's come to our attention that somebody on your address has been downloading movies illegally. Knock it off. And you just, then you maybe will want to lock down your Wi-Fi. So that's one thing. The other problem is when they're on your Wi-Fi, they are on your network. So I presume you have Wi-Fi. You must have a computer, right, Vicky?
Right.
So
I pay for Internet service, and that's why I was so surprised.
It's not, it may also be a violation of your Internet service terms of agreement. In some states, it's actually illegal to have open Wi-Fi. In some states, it's illegal to use somebody's open Wi-Fi. The laws are varied on this. I wouldn't worry about the law. The risk is there, but it's minor. The bigger risk is that if somebody really is nefarious, they are on your network, so they could try to hack your system. I guess I don't. There are some risk. It's not a huge risk.
Do I call my Internet service and say, okay, I need a passcode?
Well,
for my Wi-Fi.
Provided you with the Wi-Fi access point? Did you buy that, or did your ISP provide you with that?
No, I go through my cable company, and I was really surprised that I even had it. I mean, I didn't know I had it. And I live in this like triangle, and the schools have it, and the library has it, and.
Yeah, I mean, since you didn't even know you had it, the cable company put it in. I would call them and say, I would like to put on, and now write this down because it's important. I would like to turn on a WPA. Encryption, WPA. Remember the Works Progress Administration under FDR, WPA. And they'll turn that on and they'll say, okay, here's your password, or they'll ask you for a password. Now, that password is necessary for somebody to use your Internet access. You can then give that password to your son. He can safely use it. It's safer for him, too. And you don't have to worry about drive-by porn downloads.
Well, okay. All right, that sounds good to me.
I think it's what you should do. As I said, for years I left my Wi-Fi open, but times have changed a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's what I asked him. I said, and his response was, and he's 13, is please don't shut this down.
Well, I don't blame him. He wants to use your Wi-Fi. And of course, it's your son. It's fine for him to use it. But what I would suggest is that you turn the password on and give him the password. Then he still can use it.
Yeah, okay. That sounds good.
Okay.
WPA encryption.
Encryption.
I got it.
Yeah, they'll know what to do.
Okay.
Thanks,
Thank
Vicky.
So
yeah, I think that's a good question, actually, and it's still like somewhat of a moot point. If you live in an area where you have no neighbors, if you live in the country, leave it open. If you don't mind people borrowing your Wi-Fi, leave it open. Modern routers have guest access. That's kind of cool, where you can give them access to your Wi-Fi without compromising your network. That would be safer for sure, but you still have the problem of them doing things maybe you don't want them to do on your network. Hey, let me remind everybody to back up today. Sunday's backup day. Father's Day. Once a year, you should back up. See, that's the problem. There are many of you who say that. Oh, back up next year. The problem is, what happens if the worst happens? You've got all this great stuff on your hard drive, your pictures, your financial records, music, movies, sometimes irreplaceable stuff on your hard drive. You got to back it up. And may I recommend a solution? It's automatic. You don't have to think about it. It works on PCs or Mac. It's secure. It's encrypted. It's private. And best of all, it's easy to restore. In fact, you don't even have to wait till disaster happens. You can log on to your Carbonite account anywhere, even with your smartphone or your iPad, and there's your data. I love that. So it's cloud storage plus backup. It's so easy. It's so great. And it's so affordable. $59 a year for all the data on your internal drive. Every bit of it. You do this, please. Carbonite. Try it free for 2 weeks. You don't need a credit card. Go to carbonite.com. Use the offer code Leo. And if you decide to buy, use the offer code Leo. You'll get 14 months for the price of 12. 2 months free. You got to back it up to get it back. So do it right. And by the way, great tech support from Carbonite, too. They just moved it all to Maine. So you get somebody who talks like this, say, oh, you're having a problem, eh? Well, let me see if I can help you. It's so nice. Carbonite. You got to back it up to get it back, so do it right. With Carbonite.com, use that offer code Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, will be back right after this.
Father, United States, Zimbabwe, all these countries, Father's Day. But if you're from Germany, Luxembourg, Uruguay, celebrate on a different day so you don't care about your dad today. Unless you live under his roof, then you best be nice until you move. George Washington is a well-known name. But
who's that? That's good. I like it. Happy Father's Day, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks to Kyle Venom for the great Father's Day music all day today. Dan in New Hampshire. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you, Dan?
I'm good. My question was, my friends and I started up a website not too long ago, and we're having some trouble, you know, now trying to get people to look at it. We do a podcast, and we've gone through, you know, made a Facebook page, made a Twitter account. We keep those updated.
Good.
But the problem is we're in the gaming kind of like aiming industry kind of thing. So it's kind of like a saturated market.
Yeah, it's a lot of competition. yeah. But that could be good and bad. The reason there's a lot of competition is there's a lot of interest.
So our thing is like where I'm from New Hampshire, everybody that's on the podcast and that runs our site is from New Hampshire as well. So we figured we'd go for the whole, you know, we're from New England thing.
I like that. The New England game, huh? It could be like Old Farmer's Almanac. What's the name of your podcast?
Well, it's called the OnCast, A-U-N. It's the OnCast podcast.
And why A-U-N? What does that mean?
It's for all you need.
Ah, so it's AUNonline.com. Is that right?
Yes, that's it.
All right. Well, that's cool. So New England's gaming site. I like that. You know, that was clever because you're trying to create a niche. Makes you something unique.
Yep, because I know there's a lot of sites out there that are just, you know, everything gaming specific. But, you know, I thought putting a New England spin on it.
Sure. I like it.
Yeah.
It's a challenge. Podcasting, you know, I'm a podcaster. I've given a lot of talks. In fact, I was a very early podcaster. Jumped on the bandwagon right away in 2004 when it started. But what I've always said to podcasters is, it's great. Do it. Make a podcast. But don't expect to make a living at it. Do it because you love it. Do it because it's fun.
Yep.
And, of course, even if you're doing it because it's fun, you want to have an audience. But even if you only have 500 people listening, that's a good audience. I mean, if you had 500 people, you know, in a room listening to what you said, you'd be pretty happy.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is we get, you know, we want to see 50,000, 500,000. And that's just difficult. It's just challenging. I mean, what you should do, the best way to build a community, and by the way, that's one thing that's different about podcasting. You should think in terms of community, not audience. Make it a two-way street. You want people to participate with you. But the best way to get them to participate with you is for you to start by participating with other shows and other sites and being active, being out there in the internet community, building a name for Dan and Brett. That's what you need to do. And it's not going to happen overnight. It may never happen. So that's why you got to do it because you love it. Because sometimes it just takes longer than you think it's going to take or may never happen at all.
Yeah, we're trying to do some stuff with we go to a community college and we're trying to do some sort of like charity event. You know,
great idea. Great idea. It's all guerrilla marketing, isn't it? It's just trying to think out of the box. You don't have budgets to buy billboards. I don't think buying a billboard's a good idea anyway, or a television ad. You've got to use the internet to promote it. You're doing the right thing. You've got Twitter. You've got Facebook pages. You go out there. You charity. That's great. Charitable causes. You know, make it fun. Get people to want to participate with you. Get on a radio show and tell everybody that they should go to AUNonline.com. And you've only done 7 shows. Call me when you've done 700. But I think you know what you need to do. You just keep doing what you're doing. Not everybody can be Ashton Kutcher. Not everybody wants to be Ashton Kutcher. Good luck, Dan. I'm really glad I could at least give you a plug. And maybe people who are listening will want to check out the AUN, All You Need Cast. AUNCAST. Just Google that. You'll find it. Hey, before we get to our, I think it's going to be the last call of the day, Dion from Florida. He's got a video camera that writes to CDs, but he can't read it on his Windows machine. I'm going to talk about that. Before we do that, though, I do want to remind you about Nod32, best little antivirus out there. We've talked about it many times. It's lightweight. It's fast. Look, your behavior is the most important thing to keeping you safe online, but it's really nice to have some backup. And Nod32 is the backup. It runs in the background. It scans stuff. It keeps you from doing dumb things. It is fantastic, and it does it all without slowing you down, without getting in your way, and I think that's important. That's one of the reasons, you know, CNET gave it 5 out of 5 stars and named it their editor's choice for antivirus. It's one of the reasons I've been recommending it for years. I want you to try it free for 30 days. Go to ESET.com/Leo. ESET's the company that makes it. ESET.com/Leo or call 866-935-ESET. And by the way, they're on Facebook. Might be a good idea to like them. It's facebook.com/ESETUSA. You'll be looped in on contests, special offers, exclusive content, too. If you use Windows, man, you need Nod32. Best little antivirus there is. Little in size, big in power. All right, Dion in Florida, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You got a camcorder that writes to CDs, huh?
Yes, yeah. And the worst thing is it's a generic camera from China, so...
Oh, Lord.
Now,
usually it's important when you write to a CD on a camera that you close it out. You finalize that CD before you try to read it in a computer. Is there a command on the camera to do that?
No, because when I plug it into the computer, it just goes black. And then because there's an actual thing, you click on the camera to go to PC camera, so it acts like a webcam almost.
Oh, interesting. And
then you plug it in, and then... It can't. Windows 7 won't find the driver, so they have the CD disc, which has the driver on it. But you click driver in the little installation window, and it just brings you to a bunch of .sys files. So I just need a pin. I guess I don't know what to do here because either I can just manually show Windows where the driver is, or.
Yeah, that's the problem. You know, those SYS files are the driver files. I don't even know if they're compatible with the Windows 7. And I take it that this company doesn't even have a website.
I think I got it from them for initial, like I was reviewing it, and I got it from them and I reviewed it. And this was the first time I went back to it to see if I could.
There are a lot of Chinese companies that sell this stuff, and unfortunately, you kind of they manufacture, but the software that's required to use it may be kind of flaky or weird. Or if you can find the website that goes with the camera, now here's a little tip: probably they were not the manufacturers of the camera. Probably that one company makes it and a number of companies sell it. You'll see that all the time with a lot of these kind of no-name companies selling the same hardware. So you may luck out. If you could do a search for that camera, look at a bunch of different sites and see if you can find the same camera. Okay. And get the driver. What you want to do is are you using Windows 7?
Yeah.
What you want to do is you want to find Windows 7 if possible. Windows 7 driver, Windows Vista driver would be the next best thing.
And I think it was on the actual disk. Was Vista.
Well, that's good. That's good. You might be able to point Windows to the where the sys files live and say, "Hey, install this driver."
Yeah, and they have 2 different drivers for audio and video. So.
Yeah, that's normal.
Okay,
that's normal. You're just going to have to mess around with it. Unfortunately, it's one of those situations where there's probably no one you could call, and if you can, they probably don't speak English very well. How's your Chinese?
I don't think it's that well, Leo. I don't.
You see, kids today, you should be learning Chinese.
Yeah.
Cool. So, Dion, you review hardware for a website, or what do you do?
Right now I'm actually with a company called BuyMeAniPhone.com. And
that's
then E&J Tech Reviews. That's my YouTube on there.
Good for you, Dion. That's right. E&J Tech Reviews. I'll check it out.
Okay, appreciate it.
That's great. Thanks for calling, Dion. It really is good to talk to you.
Happy Father's Day to you, Leo.
Thank you. Say that to your dad now. Don't forget. Thanks to everyone for being here. I do hope you have a great Father's Day. I'm off to visit my family in San Francisco. We're going to go out to dinner. But I hope whatever you're doing, wherever you are, you have a great geek week, and you'll come back here. We'll do this all over again next weekend. How about that? What do you say? If you, in the meantime, if you want more stuff, I'm doing shows every day. And you can find that all on my Twit network, TWIT. If you just Google Twit or you go to twit.tv, you'll find it all there. There's a link on the Tech Guy site. And that's where we put the show notes. We put the audio for all the 779 previous shows. This show will be there, too, audio and video, in a couple of hours. It's techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. Hey, thanks for being here. I'll see you next time. Leo Laporte, I am the Tech Guy.